The yellow light!
I'm walking here!
Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH. We are streaming live on all those smart speakers like Amazon Echo. Two teenagers were shot dead, left along I-5 in Seattle. And there is one exclusive detail that is being completely left out of this story, which is why it's what's trending.
What's trending? Crime.
So the Washington State Patrol, they are investigating two 16-year-old boys who were found dead last week. One was found on Thursday night, and then a quarter mile away, 10 hours later, the second body was found. And on Friday, they were saying, well, look, we don't know if this was related. They're related. They have since confirmed that they are related. In fact, both of those boys knew one another, something that the Washington State Patrol learned after talking to the families. Both were shot to death. Initially, they were wondering whether or not maybe they got hit by a car. No, they were both shot to dead and left there. Now, they haven't told us what happened, and they're not sharing many details. But essentially, they're coming out and saying, according to Rick Johnson, Trooper Johnson, to Como TV, look, if you saw something, say something.
Maybe they heard something in that area or another area where shots were fired. They didn't report it. Maybe they didn't think it was something they need to report.
Now, I am told one of these boys was formerly of Echo Glen Juvenile Detention Center. According to two of my sources, one of them was at Echo Glen and released, obviously, a little bit too early. I'm told he had previously escaped house arrest. Now, does that tell us anything about for certain what happened? No. Does it provide some hints? Perhaps. Yeah, it does. Does social media accounts that they had and posted certain photos with guns that certainly looked illegal, modified, does that tell us for sure what happened on Thursday, Friday? No. Does it provide some hints? Yes. But no matter what happened here, these are two dead 16-year-olds. When dealing with juveniles in this state, at least for one of them, the state fails every single time. Every single time. Failure after failure after failure. Because in the rare instances in which a juvenile actually serves some punishment in a juvenile detention center, understand that they're the worst of the worst in this state to put a kid in teenage jail. They must be the worst of the worst. And yet sometimes they're released seemingly overnight. They're there and then they're not. They're released too soon. They reoffend. They get into more trouble. And a best case scenario is they go back to the juvenile detention center. Worst case, they end up getting killed. Now, I suppose these kids may have been totally innocent. They were on the right path. And perhaps they were targeted for something that happened before they got into trouble. And now they were going down the right path, and then bam, this happens. Certainly possible, and I have no idea. But I will say, stories like this and some of the details that we've already learned, based upon some of the photos that have been posted online from their social media accounts, apparently, purportedly, kind of indicates gang violence. We already know that we have a huge gang violence issue in Western Washington. Doesn't escape Eastern Washington, but it's bigger here. And no one really wants to say it, because when you say gangs, it's now deemed racist. Because when you say gangs, you now think of kids of color. And that's okay. So we're not going to talk about gang violence because there might be too many gang members who are black or Hispanic. So we're just going to completely ignore it and just talk about juvenile crime. Juvenile crime as a general topic, important, obviously. We're dealing with a whole bunch of juvenile crime. A ton. And a lot of it is because they come from broken homes. Usually it means a father isn't there. And someone then takes advantage. Some adult or even some older kid plays that role, sees these kids as vulnerable, takes advantage, then gets them to commit crimes and go down this wrong path. Now, these kids can be saved if we actually put some energy and effort into it, thoughtfulness, which you can't count on, at least not with this governor and not with this state legislature. But if you've got a gang violence problem and you ignore the gang part, you're not going to actually come up with the right solutions. You can't diagnose if you don't know what specifically we're dealing with. And they know, law enforcement knows. You ask law enforcement, they'll tell you a lot about gang violence. Federal Way deals with it. Kent deals with it. I mean, the South Sound deal with this a lot. You go into Pierce County, Tacoma, when we're talking about young kids who get involved in crimes, almost always, not always, but almost always, we're dealing with broken families and gang connections, or I call it gang adjacent. They're on the way. They're not quite there yet. To me, this sounds like they had some bad dealings and a message was sent by killing these two kids and then leaving them to be found. Now, do I have any intel in this particular case leading me to believe that? No, I don't. I am speculating. But based on covering stories like this for a very long time, looking at their ages, looking at least one of their backgrounds, that's what this seems like to me. And that is a failure of society in not protecting kids like this. There are some kids who are just rotten and cannot be saved, but the vast majority of them can be if you get involved early enough. And clearly, at least for one of them, if they're spending time at Echo Glen, that means we did not get involved early enough. And with a story like this coming afterwards, that means the state did nothing to help. And when you have an ideology that says kids should never go to jail, we're going to close youth jails, when that is your guiding light, you fail these kids. You fail these kids. Meanwhile, there was a teen who was shot and killed near a Seattle school. 15-year-old Mubarak Adam. Do you remember this story from 2 months ago? Well, there has since been zero arrests. And I don't even think they're anywhere into their investigation over at the SPD, because there were three other boys who were there in the bathroom when this kid was shot, and they haven't been interviewed. Why? Because of a state law. A state law that says you have to provide a juvenile who is considered a suspect. You have to get them a lawyer first. What happens when they connect with a lawyer? Any guesses? Say they don't talk.
They don't talk.
Precisely. You have been paying attention and or watching Law and Order. They do not talk. There's not a single attorney who says, oh, you're considered a suspect. Oh, go ahead. Talk away. This will work out for you. They never do that. And in this case, according to the reports, the three kids with three attorneys told not to talk. And that's precisely what it is they chose to do. They listened to the lawyer. This is a state law that could very easily be overturned, could have very easily been a part of the propositions this last legislative session, could have very easily, and maybe it will be in the future, or if we're smart, we'll put more Republicans in and then they'll get rid of it. But understand that this is a direct result of a state law. This is when we say, you know, we're connecting the dots. Local media generally does a really bad job of that. And so we try to make sure that you are aware of what's behind all of this. Here's a senior prosecutor, Mary Barbosa, to our sister station, Car News Radio.
It, you know, becomes almost impossible to determine without talking to them who was a witness and who was actually involved in the handling of the gun. So this really highlights sort of the problem with that statute.
Now, they always had Miranda rights, to be clear. But Miranda rights does not mean you don't get to, as a cop, have a conversation or try to have a conversation with the criminal suspect. And remember, a parent who's smart and sees this and sees their kid going in the wrong direction will say, you better talk to these cops. You better talk. That doesn't matter. That does not matter. And a cop can lose their certification in this state if they break this law. And when you have someone like Bob Ferguson, who is itching to go after cops, he's already 0-4. Understand that if this ever got to him, he would go ahead and prosecute. And we would see these cops losing their certifications. Now, in Tacoma over the weekend, you had a 17-year-old named Delilah. She was shot and killed outside of her apartment complex. This happened in the Hilltop neighborhood. Witnesses spoke to Cairo 7. Here's one.
I just heard her screaming and I went to go look outside. She was just screaming that I got shot, I got shot, I got shot.
Yeah, she got shot and she died. And she was shot after her father got into some argument with the shooter, according to the witnesses. Now, police haven't caught the shooter yet. Here's the detective.
We're still trying to get information on that at this particular point in time. But to the best of our knowledge, what we've learned in the investigation so far is that the victim and the alleged suspect knew each other.
Yeah. How's this for a tidbit? In 2018, her brother was shot and killed. So again, I'm going to guess this is probably not the best family dynamics in the world. Obviously don't know the details of why this happened and why she ends up getting shot. She could have been an accidental shooting and they were going after her dad. I have no idea. But these kinds of things don't just happen in many cases. Sometimes you might get unlucky and you're in the wrong place at the wrong time. Things like this where you know a shooter and you have your brother previously shot and killed, something is up. What it is, I don't know, but I'm not going to be surprised when we find it out. Now, finally, over the weekend, we also learned the identity of the 18-year-old who was charged after that horrific crash in Renton that killed four people, including three children. His name is Chase Jones. Now, apparently, he was speeding. They say he was driving 112 miles per hour. Now, obviously, if that is true, he was not able to stop when he should have, and he ends up hitting and killing those four people. Two of the victims were sisters, Eloise and Matilda. One was 12 years old, the other one was 13. And their dad had an especially mature response.
We believe in unconditional forgiveness, and we pray and we plead for you to pray for the young man who caused this terrible accident.
Now, there are not many people who will say something like that, right? A lot of people dealing with this kind of pain, even if they ultimately get to that position of wanting to forgive and pray, it's very difficult in the aftermath of a tragedy like this to speak up in that way. And I guarantee you that both of those kids, Matilda and Eloise, I guarantee you those kids were just as compassionate as their father. We get stories like this where young people die or there's a tragic accident, someone who it almost always turns out when we're talking about the accidental deaths where they did nothing but be in the wrong place at the wrong time, it happens to the best people. You never get a story where there was an accident, someone died, say, oh, well, it turns out the person who died was, you know, a prolific criminal who's committed multiple assaults and domestic violence. You never get that. You always get stories like this. And so kudos to the father for leaning on his faith in such a way where, while painful, he's able to cope with it in ways I think probably others would not be able to. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Your health.
There's a program that the Seattle Police Department has partnered with that I think is incredibly important. We have a lot of conversations on the show about youth and how it's very easy for youth sometimes to get off on the wrong path. Well, in a lot of ways, Courageous Lions for Courageous Kids can help keep them on the right path by showing them support as they're dealing with trauma inside of the home. It was spearheaded by a community service officer named Jeff Stubbe, and he joins me now. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Jason. It's a pleasure to be here.
So this is an outstanding program. It sort of started in a very depressing way, I suppose. Take us through how this all came to be and what this program actually does.
Well, the program stems from a call that I had about a year ago, and it was a domestic violence call. And I was summoned by one of our patrol officers to assist a family. And when I started reading the report, well, as I was going to the scene, I saw that this young man used a watch to call 911 because his mother was being beaten again by his father, and his little sister was upstairs under a blanket. And so he thought on his feet, very courageously thought on his feet, and said, I'm going to get mom the help she needs. Her phone was broken. So as I was leaving our police station, I just happened to see a lion, and that lion was on a shelf. That's perfect. A lot of times you see, you have a bear, or you'll have a puppy or dog or whatever.
Stuffed animal.
But I thought, exactly. And I thought, you know what? This is perfect for this young man. And so when I brought it and arrived, I presented it to him, and I said, for your tremendous courage, for your thinking on your feet, the Seattle Police Department is so proud of you. And I handed him the lion, and he beamed. And I said, this is good. This is good. This is something that's, I think it has legs. I just started thinking about it a bit, you know, while on scene. And I developed a little bond with this young man, and he was referred to victim advocates along with mom and little sister. But he kept in touch with me throughout a few weeks. And with that, I would encourage them to go get therapy, go get some counseling, you know, for this traumatic event that you just experienced. And then I said, okay, this is good. And so I reached out to our friends at Harborview in the Abuse and Trauma Center. And I said, what do you think if we partnered with you, and can we refer our kids who experience trauma on scene to you? And so we can start an intervention while on scene. And they said, yes, we think we can do that. And they've gone hand in hand with us on this.
And it comes completely covered, right? There's not a penny that the victim has to spend on this.
Yes, sir.
And I think that's part. I mean, look, it can be very expensive to do things like this. And I'm glad you intervened the way that you did on behalf of this young kid. And I'm glad he was able to do what he did, because as I think you know, especially when we're talking about boys who grow up in households where there's physical abuse and that's what they're experiencing, unfortunately, that can inform how they have relationships when they get older. And it's not easy to call 911 and report your father for abusing your mother.
Exactly. It's not. And if I was to, the other side of that is when the father was leaving, he told the child that you betrayed me. And so that was so painful to listen to and experience. He would talk to me about that. And so this program, as you mentioned earlier, this program has the potential, the opportunity to bring a child in the right path in the future, because we're trying to do that intervention, believe it or not, on scene, which I think that's my goal, that intervention starts on scene. And from what I'm hearing, it's about a week wait to get in and begin the therapeutic process. With the lion, we have a certificate, and we present the lion and we print a certificate of courage to the child. In my thinking is the lion will be an anchor. The certificate of courage will be an anchor. And that anchor says, I was courageous once. I can be courageous again.
Nice.
And on the back of the certificate is the information for our Harborview Abuse and Trauma Center, and that contact information. And that would go to a parent, a guardian, a CPS worker that they can access. And, you know, and the way I look at it, it's from ages 0 to 18. But then again, if we have somebody, if an officer or a CSO says, you know what, this person may have special needs, so they would qualify as well. So I've had that up on Aurora, actually, of giving a woman that was special needs and in a very bad situation, to give her, you know, a stuffed animal. And I could see the impact it made on her. So yes, it's for 0 to 18, but as officers, you make that determination. Maybe this person can use this as well.
Well, it's a way that the police department is, you know, handling these situations. They don't just show up and make arrests and then move on. They care deeply about the people that they're serving. Otherwise, they wouldn't become cops. And the same with you working within the role that you're working as a community service officer. And, you know, it's part of the job to sometimes have to leave people who just experience something dramatically traumatic. And when it's a 7-year-old or a 17-year-old, it I imagine doesn't get easier for cops. So to have this at their disposal is pretty amazing. And people who want to donate, just because I know, you know, this doesn't come cheap, you can go to the Seattle Police Foundation's website, seattlepolicefoundation.org, and you can send in a donation and you can help this really great partnership. Again, it's called Courageous Lions. I'll give you the last word.
Yes, and I think you've really made an amazing point that's right on, is our officers, our CSOs, when we go home, these calls go with us. The children's tears, the tears stay with you. I have a family. I go home, and at least I know on my drive home I did something to help these kids. And I can't always go inside and tell my family what my day was like, because it's overwhelming at times. And so this is not only for our kids, it's also for our officers to have help them have some closure to say, you know what, I did something, you know, because usually we got to go home and talk to the dog. You got to talk to the cat.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? But now you can say, I did something. And I just hope that this child will get the help that's available. And often we will follow up with a phone call a few days later and say, hey, how are you guys doing? And do you have any questions? And can we help you in any other way?
Again, folks, you can also step up and do something if you feel the desire to, by donating at seattlepolicefoundation.org. It's an organization I am fully behind. I love the work that Seattle Police Foundation does. So again, seattlepolicefoundation.org. We've been talking to CSO Jeff Stubbe. Thank you so much for coming on. And I'm so grateful that you came up with this idea. And, you know, these ideas don't come to fruition unless someone is really passionate about it. And we all appreciate that work that you're doing.
Thank you, Jason. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. When we come back, we're going to dive into the big local. Don't forget, our local tax expert and advocate Greg Nunn wants you to know the IRS is coming after those older cases, and they are getting very aggressive. So if you've received a form CP504 from the IRS, or you simply just owe money, you know you do. Be proactive. Resolve your situation by calling Greg Nunn. Google N-U-N-N, Nunn Better Tax Resolution.
The Biden administration is trying to introduce Republican-eating grizzly bears to Washington State. We'll talk to the brave congressman that's trying to save our lives and stand in the way. Tuesday morning on The Brian Suit Show.
Sammamish, Kent, Olympia, Everett.
This is The Big Local on The Jason Rand Show.
Centralia, Lakewood.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that, 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for The Big Local, brought to you by Alpine Specialty Services. They're online at alpineclean.com. This is the part of the show where we completely ignore stories coming out of Seattle and instead focus all of our attention on the communities you live in and care about most. We start in Spokane. There's a teacher there who finds herself on administrative leave. And it takes a lot to get to that point at a public school. It takes a lot. Now, in fairness, she's a music teacher, so she's not really a teacher. It's kind of like the veterinarian of teachers, where technically a teacher, but are you really a teacher? I'm kidding. Don't give me that look. And spare me from the angry text messages. I'm kidding. Sort of. Not really, but I'm pretending to, so you don't yell at me. Her name is Tamara Knapp. And she's under investigation, accused of writing a racist item in the school's newsletter. That, according to the Spokesman Review, it's at Woodrow Wilson High School. Now, they say she's probably going to be out of the classroom for the remainder of the school year. So that's a lot of time. She must have wrote something that's horrifically racist. Here's what the newsletter says. It's promoting an event called We Has Jazz. Oh, God. I'm going to tell where this is going. Has with a Z, though, so that's kind of cool.
It's kind of cool. Isn't it kind of cool? It's kind of cool. Isn't this?
Say it's cool. It sounds pretty cool.
I know. Anyone who ends the name with a Z is awesome. We Has Jazz. Supposed to take place tomorrow, but it has been canceled. Here's what the newsletter said. It invited you to, quote, take a trip from today way back to the times of slavery in America. Students could, quote, dress as slaves, hobos, or ready for a night out to the jazz clubs. So there's an apology. And it was like a multi-level apology coming from the principal. It said, again, the content shared in last week's school newsletter is unacceptable and does not align in any way with our values. It also does not reflect the professional judgment of the thousands of educators in Spokane Public Schools who have committed countless hours of training to become more culturally fluent and responsive. Okay, here's the deal. That newsletter, not racist. It's not racist at all. Is it dumb? Yeah. Does it show a remarkable lack of judgment? 100%. Anyone in 2024 who's telling their kids that they should come to a jazz night dressed as slaves or quote unquote hobos, which kudos for using the word hobo. You don't hear that very often. Anyone who does that has no judgment whatsoever. And this is someone who, according to the spokesman review, has been teaching since 1994 at least. So this is not some like 21-year-old who's got her first class. She's teaching part-time flute over in Spokane. This is someone who's been there for a while. And as much as Spokane Public Schools wants you to think that she's not a reflection of other staff members, nonsense. I've met some teachers. They're all nutty. Some of them are good kind of nutty. Some of them are bad kind of nutty. Some of them are partisan and nutty. Some of them are nonpartisan and nutty. You got nutty people who work in teaching. It's okay. They're human like everybody else. We're supposed to treat them all as absolute heroes. Never, ever, ever criticize a teacher. Unless it's a music teacher, because those aren't really teachers. But this is not racist. There was nothing racist here. And when you set me up expecting something inherently racist, I'm going to look for even what you might seem or call racist. Dressing up as slaves is not racist. It's just stupid. It shows a lack of judgment. However, if you're the Spokane NAACP, oh, are you taking advantage of this? Oh, you are leaning in. A spokesperson for Spokane's NAACP, according to the Spokesman Review, said the apology, quote, does not repair the harmful impacts of the racist newsletter. Okay, what harm was done by that newsletter? Seriously, what harm that so far has been irreparable? What harm is that exactly? Nothing, it doesn't exist, that's a lie. There was not a single person who read this newsletter and was quote unquote harmed in any way. Offended, sure, people get offended on a dime. But I'm not going to pretend that this does harm that needs some serious repair. This is an organization taking advantage. They even had a community town hall to discuss this incident and, quote, the broader impact of racism within Spokane Public Schools. Uh-huh. Lisa Gardner is the president of the NAACP Spokane. She says, Spokane Public Schools has to be held accountable for racism. She's quoted as saying, this is what community is about. It is about holding accountability. You can't hold accountability. It's time. We're tired. We're tired of talking about it. We're tired of reading about it in the newspaper. It's time to do something. It's time to continue to hold the system accountable. What do they want from this poor woman? She's being invested. She's going to be fired. But what do you want? A public flogging? Should we have her do the walk like in Game of Thrones or the House of Dragons? What do you want? Seriously, like, what else do you want? And I love this. Scott Finney, the director of Eastern Washington University's Africana Studies program, said, the first thing is to admit something's really wrong and to have that voice, have that put out in a public statement. And I think that is the beginning of it. After that, I think we have to look at what is systematically broken. Okay, yeah, systematically broken. You had one dumb teacher who did something stupid but wasn't actually racist. But you do have the people who benefit whenever they get you thinking that we live in this inherently racist society filled with white supremacy. They love that. Meanwhile, staying in Spokane over at Lewis and Clark High School, they've been very busy in their high schools. The track team saved the life of a volunteer distance coach who had suddenly collapsed. He was having cardiac arrest. He was going through cardiac arrest. And at that point, 17-year-old Brody Graham did a little bit of sort of internal debate. Well, I know CPR. I am a lifeguard and I've been trained. But do I really want to go back to having to do endless laps? I mean, it gets boring from time to time. Oh, I guess I'll save his life. So the kid, 17 years old, he went in, started chest compressions. He wasn't feeling a pulse. He said to the spokesman, "In the moment, your heart's beating so fast, you can feel it all around you. And you got to make that moment. You got to say, do I feel the pulse of my fingers or do I feel the pulse of my coach?" I was like, "I'm not feeling a pulse here. I'm going to have to start compressions." I did what I knew to do. Now, the volunteer coach is recuperating. He's 69 years old. Graham and teammate Grant Litchfield, according to the spokesman review, decisively administered CPR while emergency services were on the way, saving the coach's life, while the rest of the team of teenage boys delegated the situation. Okay, not for nothing. I'm not going to give them credit for delegating the situation, whatever that even means. What'd they do? They just stood around? I'll give you credit if you called 911, I guess. But the credit goes to the two kids. I'm not sharing this with the team because it makes it sound like a better metaphor about working as a team. I'm not going to do that. They say, according to Josh Hadaway, the coach's son, "What's cool with those kids is you work as a team in sports, but they really worked as a team outside of sports." Okay. "I think that's really cool that they came together and didn't hesitate." Now, despite their quick thinking and successful first aid, according to the spokesman review, neither Graham nor Litchfield had ever given CPR to a real human before. So this could have gone sideways real quickly. It's one thing to be taught on a doll. It's another thing to do it on a human. And when you do it on a human, things can break, which is what happened. They say rib fractures are a common side effect of effective CPR. According to the National Institute of Health, 70% of CPR cases result in skeletal chest injuries. Hadaway, the coach, his sternum broke and multiple ribs broke. And so now the kids have been booked on assault charges for breaking his... I'm kidding. No one gets put in jail for assault. They say when he took over chest compressions from Grand, Litchfield had one thing on his mind. The tune of "Staying Alive." Apparently that's real. I thought that was something that you just heard on TV. You're supposed to do chest compressions to the tune of "Staying Alive," at least the chorus. I think you can miss the rest of the Bee Gees song. They say 100 beats per minute. The song is the minimum rate the association advises giving in compressions. So kudos to those kids. I purposefully don't learn CPR because I don't want to be put in a position like this. Because they know I have money and I'll get sued immediately if I break someone's rib. And I'm not beyond purposely breaking someone's rib while also saving them, depending on who it is. Note to staff, don't have cardiac arrest in front of me.
Isn't there a good Samaritan law that prevents you from being sued for that?
Yeah. I feel like it wouldn't apply to me.
Why?
Conservative. King County, they'll charge.
You'll be out in like 2 days or less, though.
Oh, I wouldn't be booked. Let's relax here. I commit an assault. I'm not being booked. Not even to make a point. And then finally, the Skagit Valley Tulip Festival is getting an early start, pleasing women all across Western Washington who hate their husbands. Because let's be honest, the only people who go to these things are the women and the spouses or boyfriends they drag along. Tulip festivals are boring. Not a single man wants to be there. Now wait, Jason, I'm a man and I want to be there. No, you think you're impressing your wife or you think you're going to get a date out of it. So let's just stop. You're not impressed. You're not interested. They're stupid tulips. Let's all relax and stop pretending like you've never seen a tulip before. But if you like this sort of thing, you can go to Tulip Town. TNT says their farm will open on Saturday, March 30th. You can walk through 5 acres of tulip fields. Just make sure you take your Claritin beforehand. You can enjoy a trolley ride, as if that should ever be a sentence. Enjoy a trolley ride. Okay. You can display gardens, whatever that means. There's a beer and wine garden because God knows if you're being dragged out there, you're going to get sloshed. That's the only way you're going to make it through. You're going to have four beers and then go on your way, look at the tulips. You're going to end up puking in a whole barrel filled, and then you're going to have to take it home. They say there's local ice cream and coffee to buy as well. Tulip bulbs available for purchase. You can have a tulip festival in your backyard every single year. Doesn't that sound fun? And you wouldn't have to drive all the way out to Mount Vernon. God, so far.
Save on the gas money.
Yeah, I guess. Oof. Why do people pretend tulips are a thing? I get it. I wish them nothing but success. But let's stop pretending it's interesting. They're not.
They just want to seem basic and in the norm.
No, you know what? They're going out there. They're paying $15 for a ticket and for bad allergies to take one photo that's usable on Instagram. They'll take many photos, but only one will work for Instagram.
And every other person has the exact same photo.
Exactly. Then you got the husband in the background who's feigning that smile. You just know he's the one
taking the picture.
Oh, God. No, they always have to have one in the photo with them. Those are the ones that never get it put up. 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, you choose the news. Story number one, there's a new urgent warning for potheads. What is it? Well, if you're a pothead, you're probably going to want to vote. Or story number two, racial justice leaders in Boston are now demanding $15 billion at least in reparations. Oh, yeah. 1-800-465-8770. Send us your text votes.
You pick the topic on the Jason Rance Show.
Indeed you do. And you're curious about reparations. Now, I don't normally pull news packages because I find them to be boring. But my God, does a CBS News report out of Boston really highlight the absurdity of this issue? And I will say this up front. Every single Republican, every single one, should cheer them on and demand that Democrats give them all the billions that they're asking for. It's, you know what, we've got to be good allies. I think that's what they call us. Let's be good allies. And look, if the black community is upset that they don't end up getting the reparations that they ask for, you know, if I were them, I would say, okay, Democrats, I'm no longer going to vote for you. I'll go ahead and vote for Republicans moving forward. I mean, that's only if it were me. And so I fully endorse everything that these folks are asking for.
We call on the white church in Boston to join us in supporting a black reparations movement.
Standing in solid.
By the way, what is a white church? Is this your average church that's more white people go to?
Solidarity. Clergy leaders from across the city of Boston gathered for an interfaith, multiracial meeting at the Resurrection Lutheran Church in Roxbury, Nubian Square. They're here to ask the religious community to atone for black Boston suffering and support black reparation.
Real quick, I'm sorry. Did you say they have to the whole community has to atone for a history that they were never a part of and have no meaningful connection to, really? You have to atone for that? Oh, I'm so sorry. Should we atone for the people who were directly impacted, or do we have to atone for people who have never seen slavery? Not in this country. Which ones exactly?
And we are coming, as Dr. King said, to get our check.
Okay, real quickly, I feel like in 2024, Martin Luther King Jr. would see the progress that was made and realize maybe reparations is not a good idea. And it's just used as a crutch for people to use to justify them not getting a job, getting a raise, getting a date, whatever it is. No, I've been harmed by historical injustices. I'm dealing with the historical traumas.
Organizers from the Boston People's Reparation Commission say they're also following up on their demand on the city of Boston for a $15 billion initial payout to be.
Initial! It's just the initial payout. It's not even the full payout. $15 billion initially.
In the process towards repair and reconciliation to the city's black community.
Does this work like a lotto where you can get all $15 billion up front but at a smaller rate, or you can get it in like monthly chunks? Do you think it works that way? Probably not.
I mean, if you propose that idea to them, they might adopt it.
No, because you know what? They want the full initial offering or asking of $15 billion. That's it. Just $15 billion, which is my understanding Boston has just kind of laying around.
$5 billion as initial payment around cash payouts, $5 billion around strengthening our financial institutions, creating a new black bank.
Oh, a black bank now. That sounds good. That's definitely something Martin Luther King Jr. would be a fan of. Let's have racial segregation. We'll have a black bank. No white people allowed, no Hispanics, no Latinos, Asians, whatever you want to identify as. Although, if you identify as black, you can join, even if you're not. But that's it.
$5 billion in terms of addressing issues of the education achievement gap between blacks and whites.
That must be it. The reason why the numbers are what they are, whether we're talking about Boston or Seattle, it's because of historical injustices and racism. That's why right now a kid might be acting up and getting a suspension. That's why the numbers, test scores from math, English, that's why they are lower than others. Now, weirdly, the people who aren't impacted by historical injustices are Asians, who do better than white people. Jews, as a group, we generally do well in schools. We have that little thing called the Holocaust. But, you know, other than that, really, it just puts you down, these historical injustices.
In 2022, the Boston City Council and Mayor Michelle Wu offered an official apology for the city's involvement in the transatlantic slave trade. She also launched two task force research teams to study Boston's role in slavery and its long impact on descendants.
Now, remember what he just said there when the story pops up, and this is going to be around for at least a week nationally. This story will get picked up. They asked for this. Michelle Wu, the mayor of Boston, and others who got together and said, hey, how do we pander to the black voters? Because this was all being done in the name of Black Lives Matter. All of this stuff, everything here you now see, was set up in 2020 and 2021 as progressive politicians were trying to do whatever it is they could to be seen as helping the black community, because they saw this national movement that they wanted to be a part of. It would earn them some social currency, but more important for them is it will guarantee, they thought, a future vote. That's all they thought they were getting out of this. And then at some point they realized, oh my God, what did we do? They're actually taking this seriously. They think we're going to give reparations out. Oh my God, what? Okay, maybe they'll forget. Maybe they'll forget about this and just, you know, stop meeting. Oh yeah, that's probably, just don't mention it anywhere ever again. Oh, what, they put out a final report and they're asking for how much? Oh my God.
So we still suffer from the trauma of those instances, and even today, dealing with racism.
No, you don't. You're not dealing with any trauma. You're not dealing with any trauma. Not as a whole. Now, individually, has someone experienced racism? Sure. The same way I've experienced homophobia. The same way I've experienced anti-Semitism. Okay. I'm not traumatized by it, and it's not getting in the way of any work that I do. Now, if I told myself I am a victim and I can never move forward because of that trauma, then guess what? It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? At some point, we start to say, oh, I'm not even going to go for this job because, you know, all the historical trauma, all the institutional anti-Semitism. And so you don't even try. And then bam, before you know it, guess what happens? Well, you got another failure that you will, instead of taking personal responsibility for, you will just blame on the historical trauma, which is precisely what's going on right now with a whole lot of people who buy into this garbage.
On Saturday, this group called on the white church in Boston to support the black community for its association in slavery.
Today, we call upon this city, its financiers, and its white churches to stop the shirking, stop the lying, tell the truth, and pay what is owed.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a hostage taker at all. So this is a political problem that the left brought on itself. It's happening in California in a big way. It's happening in Chicago, not all of Illinois. It's happening in cities that decided to lean into the reparations debate, and they're going to suffer political consequences as a result, because nothing that they're asking for here will ever come true. Nothing. You maybe will get some investments in the black community, which they were going to do anyway, and it'll be repackaged as if this is part of our reparations, you're not going to get a cent. No individual will get anything except for the people who are exploiting this for political gain, who end up making some money off of it on the other side of things. Not the political side, but the activist side. It's the Jason Rand Show.
The Biden administration is trying to introduce Republican eating grizzly bears to Washington state. We'll talk to the brave congressman that's trying to save our lives and stand in the way. Tuesday morning on the Brian Suit Show.